This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Welcome to another Technorama exclusive interview. I'm your host, Chuck Tomasi, along with my partner, Craig Stepp. This time, we're talking with an avid storm chaser who, with her partner, Melanie Metz, have been storm chasing together since 2001. While they aren't really sisters, they share the same passion for twisters and hence call themselves the Twister Sisters. They have appeared on Good Morning America, Entertainment Tonight, Fox News in Minneapolis, and two specials on the National Geographic Channel. Their tornado footage has been seen on NBC, CNN, and the Weather Channel. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Peggy Willenberg, one half of the Twister Sisters. Welcome to the show, Peggy.
Thanks for having me.
First, let's start out a little bit. Where are you located, or better yet, what area do you cover in your storm chasing?
Well, I live in Minneapolis, a suburb of Minneapolis, Minnesota. But as far as our storm chasing goes, we cover the entire length and breadth of Tornado Alley, which is from the Canadian border to the Gulf Coast. And most of that time is spent, from the panhandle of Texas up through Kansas, Nebraska, and then as the season goes on, about the third week in June, we end up getting back to Minnesota and the Dakotas. So we travel a lot. We put on about 18,000, 20,000 miles a summer. And we just pretty much go where the storms are.
Wow, that's a pretty big range.
Yeah, it is. it just gets a little bit much sometime, but we have the winter to recover.
When is the best storm chasing season?
Well, the jet stream, the northern branch of the jet, which is called the polar front jet, moves from the southern United States up to north of the border into Canada as the spring progresses. So right about now, we're starting to see a beginning with severe storms in northern Texas. The Gulf moisture is penetrating that far now, and Oklahoma and southern Kansas. And then as the spring goes on, by early May, we're looking at Kansas, Nebraska. And then in June, Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota. And then finally, by July or August, up in the Canadian Prairie provinces. So it just kind of moves north with the jet. And any time of the year, you can pretty much say, well, I think I'll be in this state because this is where the jet will be at that time of year.
Mm-hmm. When do you plan on getting on your horse and riding?
Well, right now I'm looking at the Storm Prediction Center website, and I see that there's a severe thunderstorm watch in southern Kansas. And so I see the season is sort of beginning to kick off. We're starting to see some events going on, and I would guess that probably by mid-April we'll be on the way.
You ever come down here to any hurricanes like we get off the East Coast?
Well, Melanie and I don't really enjoy chasing hurricanes because the big thing about hurricanes is you know where they are, and our big challenge for tornado chasing is forecasting and pinpointing what's really a very microscale event. But mm-hmm. We have, Melanie and I are also very big-time animal advocates. So we came down to the New Orleans area after Katrina and were involved in animal rescue, after the storms and after the mm-hmm. people had been able to get out to shelter. Then we went in after the animals. So we don't really make it a point to follow the hurricanes except to maybe follow the consequences of the hurricanes.
How did you and Melanie get interested in storm chasing, and how did you meet up? Can you give us a little background on that?
Well, Melanie and I are a lot alike. We've both been fascinated with severe storms since we were really little kids, 3-4 years old. I can remember when I was that age, and I grew up in Indiana, so we had a lot of big-time weather there. I can remember looking at a picture of a tornado in some publication, I don't know what it was, And I ended up cutting it out and pinning it up in my bedroom and looking at it constantly until the thing literally fell apart. And I was just fascinated with this phenomenon. I really can't explain why, although if you talk to more than one or two storm chasers, you'll find this is a really common shared experience. And Melanie was the same way, although she grew up in Arizona, and they're really, obviously not a lot of severe weather there, mostly lightning. But she was just as fascinated, and as a little kid, she said to herself, well, someday in my life, I'd like to see a tornado. Well, we both didn't know each other, of course, at the time, and we both went off to college and actually got the same degree, chemistry, biochemistry. We went to different universities, but I went to Purdue, and she went to St. Cloud State. And then, the years went by, and lives went by, and you get married, and you have kids, and that kind of stuff. And about, almost 5 years ago now, we both got to the point where we said, all right, we're ready in our lives now to really make storm chasing something that's important and prioritized, because we have time now. I had a little girl who was big enough that mom didn't have to be home all the time, mm-hmm. and she had unfortunately ended a first marriage, and so we were both kind of in the same position where we wanted to do more with the interest that we had. And it so happened that at that same time, a friend of ours, now a mutual friend, although we didn't know him at the time, started a internet email discussion group about severe weather that was based in Minnesota. And we both joined this list and soon found out that we were the only women on it. And so it sort of evolved, kind of like chatting online and then calling and then saying, well, let's have a chase together. And we found that not only did we make a good team, that we both had the same attitude towards severe weather, that we both treated it as just like we did anything else in our lives. The scientific method was the way things work. But we found that two is a lot better than one, because there are safety and navigation issues and things of that nature. You can't drive a car, look at a computer, read a map, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, and besides that, we really liked each other. So it just kind of grew from that point, and we've been chasing together ever since.
Wow.
Now, I have, for the record, I have tried to do all those things at one time in the car.
Didn't work.
Not that easy.
Well. What sorts of gadgets do you carry or tow or drag with you?
Well, sometimes we end up dragging logs and fallen trees, so we try not to do that. But we have a pretty good complement. I drive a Chevy Suburban, and it's a really good vehicle for storm chasing. It's heavy and it's long wheelbase, so really good and stable. In the car, we have a dual band ham radio. We have a couple of GPS receivers. We have my laptop mounted there, and that we can get data on the laptop from a couple of ways. One would be an internet connection through, mine happens to be Sprint, but there's obviously lots of choices. So when we're in range, we can use, we have an amplifier and antenna on the roof, so we can get internet data and download anything we want to see, live radar, satellite views, forecast products, surface observations, all that stuff. But then a lot of times, unfortunately, when you're chasing storms, there's no cell phone service available.
Mm-hmm.
So we use a product that's called WeatherWorks ThreatNet. And what it is it operates through XM radio. So we have a satellite antenna on the roof of our vehicle, and through this, we get specific weather data, which includes live, real-time radar warnings, satellite, surface winds, many, many different products, METARs from the various stations, and so on. So, the internet is great when you can get it, but if you can't, the XM radio alternative is the perfect tool, really.
And you get just weather from that, or can you communicate with that as well?
No, it's not something where it's not XM radio and you just dial in to this or Martha Stewart. It's just this particular band, and you subscribe to this, and on that is all these sub features, like I said, satellite, radar, warning console, surface wind, you know, all that stuff. So it's the best thing since sliced bread for storm chasing, really.
This is Adam Savage from Mythbusters, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
Now, do you do your forecasting, or do you rely on somebody else for that?
Oh, no, that's part of the deal. Mel and I do all our own forecasting.
Okay.
You know, it's not to say the Weather Service doesn't have great forecasters. In fact, some of our very best friends are work for the Weather Service, but we do our own.
And we don't insult her, Chuck.
But we both have postgraduate work in meteorology, you know, a university meteorology, so... We do that ourselves.
Oh, you beat me to my next question. I was going to ask you about your meteorological background, and is it self-taught, or where did you go to school to pick up all this?
St. Cloud State University. It's one of the little hidden gems of the AMS actually approved meteorological programs. It's the only program in Minnesota, but it's one of the best operational meteorology programs in the United States. So, fortunately, that's only an hour north of the Twin Cities, so we availed ourselves of that and went through all the meteorology classes there. I mean, we already have degrees, and they don't have an advanced degree, so we didn't see a reason to, you know, take phys ed or whatever to get another BS, but we wouldn't be very good at that anymore. But we did take all the meteorology, and I feel like, you know, it was invaluable in storm chasing. You can't pick out features, you can't find these mesoscale things if you don't understand how the atmosphere works.
Right,
you know,
right.
So that was certainly invaluable to both of us.
One time, one of my roommates, he had his friend over, and he actually worked with the Weather Service. It was early in the morning. I was standing out on our porch, and he had, of course, slept over that night, and he came running out, and it was just starting to rain. He goes, "Is it raining?" I was like, "Yeah." He says, "I left my windows down in my car." So you think you'd know.
That's kind of like the fortune teller going out of business. You'd think they'd know.
Well, you know, that I have to tell you that at least my friends who were my classmates at St. Cloud State and who have gone on to work for the Weather Service are just as darn geeky as Melanie and I are, and we're all like weather crazed. But there are a lot of guys, or people, I shouldn't say guys, but they mostly are guys, in the Weather Service who learned their meteorology, you know, Korean War, Signal Corps, that kind of thing. And it's a job. It's not an avocation. It's not an obsession. Now, the younger meteorologists, like I said, they're kind of the geek squad just like we are. But there's an awful lot of that still left in the Weather Service. So maybe not quite the enthusiasm that a lot of us informal meteorologists have. But it's changing. It's changing with all the new graduates. Lots of women now, too.
What kind of percentage is there now? Is there a lot of women doing this, or?
Well, storm chasing, there are very few women that do it. I mean, it's certainly not at a, you know, almost full-time occupation. I don't know why that is. I mean, traditionally, there have not been a lot of women in meteorology as a field, but that's changing. I mean, I've gone to conferences where Melanie and I, as speakers, were the only female speakers. But that really is changing now. Our class at St. Cloud State, I think out of, say, 35 people, there were 5 women. So that's, you know, it's changing, it's improving, but it really hasn't hit the chaser part of the segment of the population yet. We're really very few people, very few women do this particular thing. And I don't know why. It's a lot of fun.
You say it's a lot of fun. You said y'all approach it as a scientific, you know, method when you go storm chasing, but there's the excitement part of it too, right?
Well, sure. I mean, there's excitement on many levels. I mean, first of all, you're right there in the middle of Mother Nature's most violent phenomenon. And, you know, you put yourself there. So that's pretty exciting. You were able to pinpoint a place where this very rare phenomenon forms. You got there. Then you can see it. Then you can be there and feel it. I mean, you know, all the warm RFD and the inflow and, my goodness, the hail's coming down. And so it's a really very sensory experience. And then certainly seeing a tornado is knowing how rare and unusual and how powerful it is very, very exciting. It's very elemental. It's something that very few people get to see. So, yes, there is a thrill of being part of it.
Do you have any hair-raising stories you'd like to share?
Oh, hair-raising stories. We've got a dozen of them.
Give us a good one.
Day in, day out, nothing really.
Well, you know, people often ask us. They say something like, well, what was your scariest experience? And they're usually surprised by your answer because it's the other big question is, well, how's the closest, you know, you've ever been to a tornado? And,
right.
and they aren't the same thing. Very rarely do we ever put ourselves in a position where the tornado forms and we're in front of it and then we have to run away. I mean, that would be a huge mistake on our part. And we don't really like to, I mean, that's just a stupid mistake to make, somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. But we did have a tornado in southern Minnesota, of all places. I think it was 2003, July. We were pursuing this cell that we knew was going to make a tornado very shortly.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought we were in just the right place relative to the storm so that we were watching, saying, okay, you know, it's just going to be about half a mile east of us as this forms. Well, you know, it is Mother Nature, and it isn't always by the book. The darn thing produced a tornado 25 yards, on the road right in front of us.
Ooh, wow.
We got to watch, well, you know, what we like to call the birth of a tornado. It formed, and it couldn't have been more than like 10 feet across. And within 2 minutes, this thing was huge. It was picking up entire trees and throwing them. And we were right there.
Oh,
so
my.
We got to really see tornado genesis. And the first person, fortunately, it was moving away from us. But that was our kind of our close encounter. But the scariest thing wasn't really that close. And that was in Nebraska, May 22nd, 2004. And that was the day of the Hallam, Nebraska tornado. That was the largest tornado ever recorded. It was 2.5 miles wide. It was an F4 with a 52-mile path length, and it occurred after dark. So here we are, we're chasing, we're right behind this turkey. We couldn't have been more than a quarter mile behind it. We can't see it except in the lightning flashes. And we come across, well, the road's blocked by power lines. Couldn't go that way. So we had to go back, and as we're going back to try to find an alternate road, a herd of cattle ran into the road, and of course they were black. So I was like, you couldn't see them. So, you know, right. Screech on the brakes. Well, we're getting a little freaked at this point. So we take a side road that's a dirt road, and as we're working our way back towards the tornado, we see a man lying in the road and begging for help. And then it's very dark. I mean, where there is no light other than lightning flashes. And this young man comes to the car, and he can barely walk. He's falling. And he's saying, my family is trapped under my house, and I need help. Well, there's nobody around. You know, you're out in the middle of nowhere. So as it turned out, three people were trapped in this completely collapsed house. And there was nobody there but us, so we had to get them out. And that was a very hair-raising experience, completely dark. You can smell propane. You can't see anything other than rubble everywhere, except you know there's people inside.
Wow.
And nobody there but you. So as it turned out, we were able to get them out, and everybody had just minor injuries. And we've since become very good friends with that family. And when they rebuilt their home, they asked us to put our handprints in the concrete, you know. So it was quite a night, and then there were a couple more tornadoes that came up behind us. So it was like Freak Out City.
Oh, my gosh.
But it all had a good ending, you know, so...
That's good.
That was our scariest experience. And when we went back the next day and looked to see big trucks thrown several miles, a railroad train tossed off the track, and all this stuff, we were like, wow, maybe it's a good thing we stopped.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say your scariest experience was the washrooms.
Yeah, rest
well,
stops.
Now, you know, you got to understand, there's a couple of different kinds of restrooms on the plane. There's the ones, you know, in the gas station that are the unisex version kind of deal. And then that's the luxury ones. Then there's the open air variety, which are, you know, like a field kind of deal.
Yeah.
And those are okay too, but you have to watch out for cactus. So
I lived in Texas. I know what you mean.
And snakes, too, in Texas. If you're going to be in Texas, you got to, not at night, but boy, in the daytime, you got to be careful you don't kick over any mesquite or something.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
This is Steve Wozniak. You're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
I see on your website, which we will plug at the end, that you've got free storm chasing tours. Tell us about that.
Well, that was a promotion that we were approached by a producer who wanted to do a reality television show about our storm tours. And I don't watch TV very much, but I guess the idea was, you know, you got a bunch of people, put them in a truck, and put them together in a week where it's hot and you drive long days and not a lot of food and kind of see what happens, see if anybody, you know, hits somebody else or gets drunk. Or and so we got a lot of people that applied to us that wanted to participate in that, and we do have quite a long list, and right now we're just basically saying, hey, everybody, hold off. We have to know if this is actually going to be produced, then we'll get back to you. But you know how TV is. You never know until the day of. So right now we're saying, please don't send us any more because we're just kind of waiting to see if anyone bites at this thing. So, it'll be interesting if it happens. I think, you know, it's sort of like closing up a vehicle and throwing a firecracker inside and seeing what comes out.
It was a dud.
Let's hope so.
How did you get picked up by the National Geographic Channel?
Oh, let me think. Well, we've done a couple of shows for them. We did one called The Tornado Hunters, and then we did a more recent one called Twister Chasers. And I guess what happened was the very first one, The Tornado Hunters, the producer was surfing the internet trying to find, you know, tornado footage for a show, and came to our website and contacted us, and then asked us, you know, some questions about what we've done and stuff. And I guess he was interested enough that in that Hallam story that I told you, that he wanted to make that a segment in his program. So we all went to Hallam and filmed that and used a lot of our, we actually, like every other videographer, no matter what we're doing, the camera runs. So we had a lot of live video from that, and that's what got him started. And then the second production, Twister Chasers, I think that came out of the fact that the first one was the highest rated special that National Geographic ever had in that time slot. So I guess they wanted to do another one about storm chasers, and that one really is an hour version of following us and Roger Hill, who also is another very well-known storm chaser, in the same period of time, and seeing what each of us saw and where we diverged and converged. And that we did last summer, and that was a long, long filming thing. It was like, I think the film crew, I think we were all ready to kill each other by the end of it. But fortunately, the very last day of shooting, we had the biggest tornado of the year, so they went away happy, and we went away.
Yeah.
So it was fun, and it turned into a nice show, and they've been showing it a lot. So, you know, that's good for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Peggy, when you're out and about and you're getting this great video footage, what do you do with it?
Well, you know, video footage is one of the few things that we can actually make a few bucks on. We work for a television station locally here in Minneapolis, and we also have been able to have our video used on Good Morning America, CNN, NBC, you know, all the national Weather Channel, all that stuff. So we might make a few little chunk of change on it. So the thing is, quickly. You have to get the video up quickly, because when something happens, the viewers want to see it now. They don't want to see it tomorrow morning. So what we have to do is figure out a way to edit and get our video up to their, you know, servers in real time, really. So what we do is we have Adobe editing software on our laptop. And as we're driving from what usually is a pretty remote site, I'm usually driving and Melanie is editing. So we edit up a package that's usually about a minute or a minute and a half, and that's about all we can send. That's usually about 80 megabytes. So then we find a Wi-Fi, and Wi-Fis are just getting to be just about everywhere these days. It used to be maybe a select motel or something like that, but now every, you know, mom and pop's coffee shop and the Dew Drop Inn motel, everybody has wireless internet. So either we find a place where we can, you know, go in and use that, or we use WebStumbler and find one that's available and use that. Wait, that usually doesn't work very well because lots of people, fortunately for them, have locked up their wireless internet, and that's the way it should be. But almost every chain, motel, truck stop, whatever, has Wi-Fi that you can use, and some of them are extremely high speed, so that we can get up our 80 megabytes within 15, 20 minutes and then go on our way.
Do you usually ask permission, or do you just park in the parking lot and
Well, it depends.
What's this truck with all the antennas out front for? I don't know, Martha.
Sometimes we sort of pull in and slip our mag mount antenna on the roof, but most of the time, even a hotel that you aren't staying at, if you go in and explain that you have video that a television station is waiting for, they're usually very gracious, and you can just come in the lobby and set up and uplink, and you're out of there. So without Wi-Fi, it would be a very difficult proposition, but as I said, everybody's getting Wi-Fi now, and it sure helps us out.
Did you hear that, Craig? Next time you're on a trip and you need Wi-Fi, say you've got video footage of a tornado.
Where?
You know what? You have to look the part. You have to look disheveled, and you have to have that wild-eyed look, and so on. So.
And? I'm ready to go.
We're there. Every road trip looks like
that. You know, it really helps if you're a woman, actually. Sorry. But
Send in the wife.
Yeah, I have to have a talk with my wife.
But Wi-Fi is like, I mean, it's like the best thing other than the satellite internet radio that we get. I mean, Wi-Fi just really makes our lives easier, so we really appreciate the fact that it's out there.
Well, I was at your website, Peggy, and there are some beautiful pictures, and the tornadoes look good, too.
Thank you.
Tell the listener where they can find out more.
Our website is www.twistersisters.com, and we've done a lot on the site. We have a lot of severe weather kind of updates and information, as well as our own chases, and there's some fun video clips on there too. So it's a fun site to glance through and meet a little bit, you know, learn a little bit about us and a little bit about severe weather. I think most people would enjoy it.
Well, best of luck to you, safe storm chasing, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this interview with Peggy from the Twister Sisters. Join us for a lighthearted look at tech, science fiction, and more on Technorama at www.chuckchat.com. This show is a member of Friends in Tech. Find out more at friendsintech.com.